WWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, hello, welcome along to the FWA podcast once again. My name's Lee Phelps, and we've got another one of the top football writers in the country with us to discuss the big subjects in the world of football this week. Delighted to say it's the Northern Football Correspondent from the Daily Telegraph, Mark Ogden, on the line. Hi, Mark, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Plenty to talk about. I was thinking we'll talk a bit about Champions League, then we'll look forward to the Premier League, then the Roy Hodgson England squad announcement as well, so we'll squeeze that in the middle of the two, if that's okay. A mixed week for English clubs in the Champions League, of course. Chelsea and Arsenal getting their jobs done nicely, and they're in a nice position to qualify from the group. Not so easy for Manchester City or Liverpool. We'll start chronologically and look at City once again. Just something a little bit short about their Champions League performances. I really hoped for the best this season, to be honest. I thought if they got to the quarters, they you never know what could happen. You wrote in the Telegraph, I think today, about it's an uphill struggle for them now. I mean, the way the fixtures go, it helps them a little more than it helps Liverpool. But you're looking at that fixture in Rome, absolutely crucial. And that's if they beat Moscow twice.
Well, yeah, I mean, there does seem to be a bit of a malaise about City in the Champions League, because they just seem to, the players, the crowd, everybody just seems to lack the same kind of edge for the Champions League games as they have for the Premier League games. And, you know, they almost got a point in Munich 2 weeks ago. We can't overlook the fact of that. But against Rome, you know, Roma just dominated the game from midfield through to the forwards. Totti was fantastic. And City just seemed to, they just seemed to be not at the races. And the crowd was disappointing, as we know, for many reasons. But the point I made is that it wasn't as much the crowd that was small. It was more a case of it was so quiet. You know, there was no kind of intensity, no edge to the atmosphere. This wasn't Anfield or Old Trafford on a European night. This was like a Capital One Cup tie. It was just dead. It was flat. And I think that contributes to the team being underwhelming, and they really have got a task now, because they'll go to Moscow. I'd imagine they'll beat Moscow home and away, but then they're going to have to take at least 2 points, if not a win, off either Bayern Munich or Roma to get through. And, you know, would you want to go to Roma in the last game of the group with people like De Rossi back and Kevin Strootman? It's going to be difficult.
I know you've written about the crowd. What is it about that? I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because I know a few Man City fans from old, you know, and they're obviously a different kind of breed to the new Manchester City fans. There's a transition. So the same happened to Chelsea in a way. You know, the kind of the older Chelsea fans almost felt like they'd been a bit left behind when the new wave came in, if you like. Is that the similar thing here? Are they not buying into it as much, or are they not accustomed to the Champions League nights? I don't really get it.
I think there's a bit of everything. I really don't think they are buying into it at the moment. I think the reasons for that are, you know, let's be honest, Man City are a club that sources a lot of its supporters from within Manchester, and, you know, it's a working class fan base. It doesn't draw fans from, you know, wealthier parts of the country. So can they afford to spend £40 on a midweek? They've had two home games last week, and I suppose this game was the one that was going to fall by the wayside, despite the fact it's the game of the group. It's Bayern Munich are probably going to win the group, so City versus Roma would be the key game. I think also City fans will tell you that they're not actually used to being in this position of success. So for them, being top of the pile domestically and even in Manchester against United is what matters most. They're more interested in being the top dogs there. So, you know, beating Roma, beating the likes of Bayern Munich, while it's great for the club's profile, it doesn't really float the boat of the fans in Manchester. That they've got priorities closer to home, I think.
It's fascinating that, isn't it? Because, you know, I don't know, you know, the players, but I'm just guessing that having won the title twice and obviously loving that, and I'm sure if they won it a third time and a fourth and a fifth and a sixth, they would absolutely love each time. But as a professional, as a world-class footballer, I guess once you've done that twice in such a close succession, you want to then go and push yourself to the next level. So maybe the players want more than the fans want in terms of Champions League football.
I think you're right. I mean... There could be a danger at City, you know, that at some point the big star players will look at City and think, I can get paid really well there, I can win Premier League titles. But, you know, is playing for Man City the same to a world-class player playing for AC Milan, Real Madrid, Man United, Barcelona, you know, playing at the Nou Camp, playing at the San Siro, you know, becoming an iconic figure at one of the world's great clubs? And, you know, you look at people like David Silva, Yaya Toure, Vincent Kompany. These players in the prime, they're enjoying the best days of their career, and they're playing them out in a stadium which is a very kind of a plastic atmosphere. There's no real sense of it being an occasion. You know, big players like big challenges, and at some point, if it becomes a choice for big players between Man City or the Real Madrids or Barcelona's or United or Liverpool's, Where are they going to go? They're going to go to a place that they want to be energised and motivated by the prospect of playing on a kind of a glory night in Europe. And the attitude has to change at City in the terraces for this to happen.
Mm, yeah. The remaining Manchester City games in the group are a trip to Moscow in October. It may be a worse atmosphere there, because we'll find out later in the week if CSKA and Moscow are going to be asked to play behind closed doors yet again, as they did against Bayern. Then Manchester City are at home to Moscow in November. And then they've got the home tie against Bayern Munich at the end of November, and then that crucial game on the 10th of December. When they play Roma in Italy. So that's the crucial one. I mean, obviously, a lot's got to happen in between then, but Roma have now got back-to-back games against Bayern Munich. If they didn't get anything out of those games, which wouldn't be a big surprise, Roma could be on 4 points come those back-to-back games, and City could feasibly be on... They could be on 7 points, you know. But if you're being conservative, maybe thinking about maybe being on City, maybe, you know, maybe a draw and a win, so they'd be on 5 points after that, I guess.
Absolutely, you know, City do have that advantage, but they've kind of taken away any kind of room for error, because they've picked up 1 point from two against two of the best teams of the group, so they can't afford any more slip-ups. And I mean, I was in Moscow last year when they beat CSKA on that night when Yaya Toure was, you know, abused by the fans. It was a horrible night, but CSKA were a really poor team. But they only lost 1-0 to Bayern Munich the night in front of an empty stadium. So, you know, it might be a bit foolish to write them off straight away, because they'll be motivated to prove a point after last year's CSKA. And if City failed to win over that, that really will put them under pressure to come good after that.
Yeah, the odds here at William Hill on the group winners and to qualify: Bayern Munich, not surprisingly, 1-4 to win the group; City 5-1; Roma 6-1; and Moscow 100-1. That one's done and dusted, you'd think. To qualify, Bayern Munich 100-1 on. Man City still got the edge from the bookmakers' point of view, though. 8-11 they are to qualify. Roma even money. CSKA Moscow 40-1. So the bookmakers are still trusting City to do it. Mark, are you?
I think it's 50-50. I think it will all boil down to that game in Rome. You know, I think you're right. It's almost like a 400-meter race. If the stagger might unwind, and by the time they can play each other, that City might be ahead because the way the fixtures fall. But Roma can maybe drop a point somewhere, but City can't. Now City really have to be on top of the game all the way, and they've got some big Premier League games in between these Champions League fixtures too, so you know, at some point they might just hit the wall.
Liverpool situation is slightly better in one respect and slightly worse in another. They've got 3 points on the board, that's where it's better, but they have now got the back-to-back games against Real Madrid at home. First of all, on the 22nd of October, then they go to Madrid on the 4th of November. So, feasibly, as Basel play Ludogorets in those two games, Basel could win both, although we've seen plenty from Ludogorets so far, and Liverpool could feasibly lose both. If that happens, then Basel will be on 9 points, Real Madrid would be on 12, and Liverpool will be on 3, with only two games remaining. And that the games are away to Ludogorets and at home to Basel. They've left themselves quite a lot to do with Real Madrid in the group, haven't they, Liverpool?
They do, yeah, but I think that those last two fixtures that you just mentioned there kind of suggest that Liverpool have got a chance. And the last game in the group at home to Basel, we've all seen on a European at Anfield can be the 12th man. And, you know, I'd imagine this goes back to that, the Olympiacos game in 2004-05, the Chelsea game that season. If Liverpool need to get something, that final game at home to Basel, I would back them every time, because it's Anfield, and it does have this strange effect on Liverpool and even strange effect on opponents. It just becomes an impossible place to play for the visiting team. So, but again, they have to get there with something to play for. You know, if you wouldn't want to go into your final two games on 3 points, because that really would be, up against it and having no room for it whatsoever.
And I suppose you've also got to throw into the mix, if Real Madrid have qualified by then, which you'd expect they would have done, they may be fielding weakened teams in the away game at Basel. You never know what Basel get out of them, and the home game against Ludogorets. You never know, do you? It's there's lots to unwind here. What are your thoughts just generally on Liverpool? I mean, that we Steven Gerrard was very open last night on the TV when he talked about them, you know, being flat, and to be fair, the manager said the same thing. They were called soft, weren't they, by him? And Gary Neville agreed on the Sky TV after the game that just not quite at it.
I just think that Liverpool last season had pretty much the perfect season apart from the end. You know, they had Suarez in fantastic form, Sturridge in fantastic form, Gerrard having a great season. Now obviously Suarez has gone in the summer, Sturridge has been injured this time, Gerrard clearly looks to be suffering the hangover from last season, so all the negatives that were there last season are there now, and adding to that they've got, you know, Mario Balotelli's trying to find his feet without Sturridge alongside him. They're just having the problems at the worst part of the season, And to me, Liverpool look at the team that they were before last season. Last season was at a high point, and they've gone back a little bit. They've gone maybe to the 6th, 7th best team in the Premier League at the moment. And I just think that until Sturridge gets back, we're not going to know what they're really about. And does he come back fully fit? Does he come back and have a partnership with Balotelli? Or will him and Balotelli be a bad mix? My concern about those two is that they're both very kind of individual players and not team-minded players. And it could be the worst partnership in history if those two decide not to pass to each other. Yeah. Equally, they could score 40 goals. It's a guessing game until they get onto the pitch together and start playing.
Yeah, true. And all the time, the defence isn't looking particularly solid still, is it? And the odds for the Group B, which is Liverpool's group, Real Madrid 10-1 on to win the group, so that's pretty much done and dusted already. To qualify, the 500-1. Liverpool 1-2, and Basel 6-4, third favourites. Ludogorets are 20-1. So again, bookmakers siding with City, siding with Liverpool over Roma and Basel, but I'm not so sure on the Liverpool one, I've got to say. They have to improve fairly quickly, won't they?
Yeah, they will, and you know, although they have the advantage of playing Basel at home in the final game, that trip to Ludogorets in Sofia could be an awkward one, because if they go into that having lost back-to-back games against Real Madrid, the pressure will be on, and as Ludogorets have shown in both games, that they can really push better teams or bigger teams all the way, and they were unlucky against Real Madrid last night. They were really unlucky against Liverpool at Anfield, so we can't just assume that Liverpool will go there and roll them over.
No, definitely not. The latest England squad's been announced today. Roy Hodgson has left Daniel Sturridge out of that squad, of course. I'm sure him and Brendan Rodgers had a chat about that. The fixtures have been pretty kind. It means that Sturridge can stay in Liverpool and stay with his club. Incidentally, he missed 18 games last season and 14 the season before, so Liverpool pinning all the hopes on Sturridge may be a risky thing. The surprises, I suppose, Mark, are the call-ups for Nathaniel Klein, who's been playing fantastically well for his club, and John Joe Shelby, who I wouldn't say he's been getting rave reviews. He's a good player, obviously, and we've seen him in the Premier League, and he's become an accustomed Premier League player. But maybe a call-up for experience for Shelby, do you think?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I've seen Shelby a bit this season, and I saw him on the opening day against United at Old Trafford, and I was impressed. He's, you know, he can be a bit over physical at times and pick up some bookings, and he's got a temper on him and a hot head, but you know, he does offer something different, and I'd imagine his selection will kind of divide opinion a little bit. But let's be honest, we haven't got the deepest kind of pool of talent, and I think that, you know, Shelby's worth a look at. Nathaniel Klein definitely has had a great start to the season, and you know, England's right back options aren't the most convincing, with, you know, Glenn Johnson and Carl Walker, who's still injured. So, you know, give the guy a go, and I mean, I see Luke Shaw's dropped down to the under-21s for the game that they have, so he's brought in Kieran Gibbs. So it's an interesting squad, but as I say, this isn't the kind of the classic days of Euro 96 when he had like a 20-man squad of really great players. This is the here and now, and the pool is much shallower than it used to be.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Just looking down that list of names, it always worries you slightly. The games, of course, coming up on Thursday, so a week today as we record this, are playing San Marino at Wembley, which, you know, it's I'm not sure what par is against San Marino, really, but for England that should be a relative walk in the park. And then the follow-up game to that is the Sunday night or Sunday evening 5 o'clock kickoff against Estonia, who won their opening game against Slovenia, technical side, the decent side. That will be a test. I mean, William Hill have been offering odds for a while, Mark, on England to win every single qualification match at 7-1, which doesn't seem big enough to me. I think you need a bit bigger, because, you know, they may slip up somewhere and may weaken down later on in the group if they've won the group. But it's a good group for them, isn't it? There's no getting away from that, and you shouldn't really need Sturridge for San Marino at the very least.
No, I mean, San Marino, I think me and you could play against San Marino and still get a result.
Maybe 45 minutes. Maybe we could swap at half-time.
Perhaps, yeah. Estonia is an interesting one, because I remember a couple of years ago they played a Euro 2012 playoff against Ireland. You know, they almost made it to the Euros. So they've got, then that team's pretty much, you know, stuck together. So they could go either way, Estonia. They could fall by the wayside, or they could actually revert back to the form they showed a couple of years ago and prove to be a thorn in people's side. You know, it's a small, tiny little ground in Tallinn. So while you would expect England to win, that is an awkward trip. And, you know, like I said, I think they will win, but that could be one of those where they drop points and maybe come away with a draw. I'd be surprised, but Estonia do have the potential to do that. But like you say, it should really be 6 points with or without Sturridge.
The Premier League, of course, returns at the weekend, and some interesting fixtures. Let's have a quick look through the TV games with Mark Ogden from The Telegraph at the moment. Aston Villa versus Manchester City is the 5:30 game on Saturday. No lunchtime kickoff on the Saturday, because we've got three on Sunday. Villa 11-2, 16-5 the draw, and Man City are 2-1 on away from home. City will obviously be hurting a bit from the week, but started scoring goals again domestically, and Villa looked like that maybe that early season promise has just started to evaporate. The problem for Villa is that they're struggling to make any shots on goal, and that's what you need against City. City will have plenty against them. There's no way they can live with the goals that City have got in them, can they?
No, and I think as well, Villa have had a decent start, but I think when playing as the big side at Villa Park, the pitch is the disadvantage to the home side, because it's such a big pitch that it encourages the good teams to play, and you really can see City picking Villa off. You know, they've got so much talent, especially in attacking positions, that I think it'd be a really tough day for Villa.
Sunday's a fantastic day. First of all, Manchester United versus Everton. I know you've been writing about the possible lineup that Manchester United could put out. 9 first-teamers were told missing for this game. Of course, Everton have got their own problems. They've got injuries as well, and plus they've got a trip to Russia. They're playing at 5 o'clock this evening as we record this. Probably won't get back into the UK till 1, 2am Friday morning, so 60 hours later, they're kicking off in Manchester. I mean, it's not the easiest for Everton. Where am I new at the minute, Mark? I've really got no idea. I keep watching the performances rather than the results and wondering if they're getting any more solid, but I thought they were lucky to get away with a win against West Ham.
Yeah, they're not looking very stable at the back, and you know, that's a result of the injuries, I guess, and Van Gaal hasn't been able to pick anything like the team that he wants to pick, but the injuries aren't going away, so you have to just get on with it. Everton haven't been keeping many clean sheets either, so you can see a lot of goals in that game, but I take your point about the turnaround from the trip to Russia, because I mean, That is the kind of thing that Sir Alex Ferguson used to complain bitterly about. You know, if you're playing a European game away in midweek and playing a lunchtime game, you know, a day or two later, it's really hard on the bodies. And Everton must be tearing the hair out at the prospect of, you know, getting back in the early hours of the morning and then up again in a way to play a game on Sunday lunchtime. It's on that alone, you would expect United to have an advantage, because Everton would shortly still have it in the legs this trip to Russia.
Yeah, you think so? It just seems unfair to let even the 2 hours extra. Tottenham play at home on Thursday night, and they've got a home game against Southampton at 2:05. You think they'd just give them that one? But I'm sure that's not as easy as all that. Also, of course, on Sunday, we've got Chelsea versus Arsenal as well. 4-6 Chelsea. Arsenal are 4-1, and the draw is 14-5. It's a bit of a case of, kind of, will the real Arsenal please stand up? Because we get one good performance from them, then we get something that's pretty ropey, i.e. Borussia Dortmund. Then they beat Villa comfortably, and you know, they weren't really that impressive against Tottenham for me. And then they destroy Galatasaray. What about this one going to Chelsea? It's going to be intriguing, this one, isn't it? How Wenger plays it.
It is. It's two contrasting styles, and it's you know, I do always fear for Arsenal when they go away to the big teams, the big rivals, because the record is just so poor, isn't it? Over the years, you know. Liverpool, United, Chelsea, they just don't get results against these teams. On this occasion, I think Chelsea look very strong. Mourinho's got them really playing well. They've got Costa scoring goals. And I just think that this is Arsenal's first big test. They played Man City at home, but I still think this is Arsenal's first big test. But equally, you know, Chelsea haven't really played anyone of any note this season. So are Chelsea the real deal, or have they just had a soft start to the campaign, which has given them a big lead, you know? Arsenal might put that to the test, because, you know, with Danny Welbeck scoring the goals and there's a lot of confidence in the Arsenal side, it's going to be a good game. But I think we'll find out more about both teams afterwards, because it's the first genuine test they both had.
And no early red cards, of course. Arsenal had Kieran Gibbs sent off after 15 minutes. They were already 2-0 down by then, by the way, and lost 6-0 in the end, if you remember back to one of the few terrible results that Arsenal had last season, wasn't it? 6-0.
Fairly brutal that day.
Yeah, it was indeed. And the final TV game is at 4:15 on Sunday. It's West Ham versus QPR, which doesn't quite have the ring of a Man United, Everton, Chelsea, Arsenal, but, you know, no less important. 19-20 West Ham, odds on, against QPR, who are 3-1, 12-5 the draw. West Ham, I mean, you know, Sam Allardyce would probably never admit that he'd cowered to the fans' demands of better football, but he's certainly got the fans on side now. QPR show very few signs to me, Mark, of improving where they need to, and that's in defence. They allow their opponents so many shots on goal, and with Sacco and Valencia in the form they're in, this could be a good day for West Ham.
Yeah, I think QPR are showing that they were the last team to be promoted last year. They look some way short of being Premier League quality, and I think they're going to have a long, hard season. But West Ham, you know, West Ham gave United a bit of a game at Old Trafford last week, and they've certainly got something about them. I think that Sam Allardyce gets a bit of an unfair rap at times, because I remember the days he was at Bolton.
Yeah.
He brought real flair to the Reebok, you know, JJ Cotch, Yuri Jorkiew, Nicholas Anelka. That team played really good football at times, and it's a bit easy to label him as a long ball man, but at the end of the day, this guy wins Premier League games. You know, he keeps teams up and he gets them performing better than other managers do. So I think maybe it's time to lay off Sam a little bit and just let his results do the talking.
Yeah, it's a great point that, because I was talking to someone about this the other day, and it seems to have been forgotten, those Bolton days. Got them into the UEFA Cup at the time, I believe, as well, and they did play good football. It seems like he's trying to build something similar here, doesn't it, where he'll only do that when he's got the players at his disposal to play in that system, which is great. You know, great pragmatism from a manager to play what he's got.
Absolutely. And you know, I think Bolton were top six, top seven for 2-3 years in a row when Sam was at the Reebok, and which is remarkable. Look where they are now. And I think,
yes,
you know, he was vying for the England job when Sven-Göran Eriksson left it. So, you know, Sam's got a great record. He did well at Blackburn before losing his job in unfortunate circumstances. And probably West Ham is you got to a club with a philosophy of playing football, which the West Ham way hasn't really been successful over the years, apart from a few relegations. So, you know, do you stick with that, or do you be a bit more pragmatic and try and get, you know, progress at the table? I think Sam's the man for that.
We ask yourself and your colleagues from the FWA when you're on this podcast for a bet of the week. Is there something that stands out to you from the Premier League weekend that you think will happen?
I just look at the fixture, and I think you look at the Liverpool-West Brom game and the problems that Liverpool have had this season. West Brom had a great result against Burnley at the weekend. I wouldn't be surprised if West Brom go to Liverpool and come away with a point. You know, I just think that Liverpool are a bit of, on the brink of crisis, perhaps, that's the overused word, but Anfield will be quite edgy, and West Brom are a team in confidence, so I think West Brom can get a result, maybe come away with a draw.
Yeah, I mean, they're 15-2 to win the game, but you know, there's a couple of ways of doing that. You can actually take West Ham and the draw, which is still 2-1, Mark. West Ham and the draw on your side, 2-1. Looks a big price the way they're playing, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
And I think I'm right in saying that since they ended the hoodoo when Roy Hodgson was there, I think they've had a couple of results. I know they beat them in the Premier League a couple of years ago when Lukaku was there. McCauley and Lukaku scored the goal. So, in fact, I think they beat them 1-0 the season before that as well, and with an Odin Wingy goal. So, a little bit of form there. Quite like that one, Mark. Thanks for your time. We'll enjoy the weekend's football, and hope you do as well, Mark.
Cheers, Lee. Thanks a lot.
Mark Ogden from The Telegraph there, joining us for the FWA podcast. One of his football writer colleagues will be with us next week as well. You can download this podcast at williamhill.com/podcasts. It's also available at the Football Writers website, which is footballwriters.co.uk. You can find it on audioboom.com, and you can subscribe via iTunes, and you get all of our football podcasts delivered to your PC, device, or your mobile. So whichever one of those you want to do, be my guest. If you're having a bet on any of the markets that we've discussed today, then very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.